Imagine a space for South Asian women where stories are not just told, but actually felt. This is Rue, Rising Over Obstacles and Healing, brought to you by Jyoti and Monica, two friends who set out to carve a little space and make a difference by sharing stories and fostering healing and strength within our community. We invite you to listen and reflect, finding your own path one story at a time. And just for sticking around, there's a golden biscuit at the end of each episode. My parents really wanted me to be a doctor or an engineer, but here I am, a podcaster. I wonder if my parents are happy with this choice. You know, I've got this outfit on and I don't know if it's appropriate. Is it too long? Is it too short? Am I going to fit in with people? What are people going to say? Is my skin color too dark? Am I too short? I don't know. These thoughts. Is it just a normal worry? Or is this anxiety? For many of us in the South Asian community, anxiety isn't always named. It's felt in our bodies, in our quiet struggles, and in the immense pressure to always appear strong. Today, we're finally going to talk about it. And we couldn't think of a better person to guide us through this conversation than our incredible guest, Sharuma. As a psychiatric nurse practitioner and a South Asian woman herself, Sharuma brings not only deep clinical expertise, but also a profound personal and cultural understanding to this vital discussion. Get ready to unpack the nuances of anxiety in our lives. Learn to identify it and discover tangible steps towards healing. Let's welcome Sharuma. Welcome to the show, Sharuma.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for having me.
It's our pleasure, Sharuma. So let's get started. We're just going to jump right into this. We want to know, when is it just a normal worry about all the little things in our lives? And when does it actually turn into anxiety?
That's a great question. Oftentimes we can wonder, what is anxiety? Is it just stress? Is it a mental health issue? Or is it just life, right? So I want everyone to kind of understand that anxiety is very normal. It's actually a very natural human emotion. It's your body's natural response to perceived threat or danger. Like, even if that danger isn't immediate or physical, it kind of makes us aware and hyper aware of the situation, such as something about to come, like you're dreading something that's going to be coming in the near future within a couple of days, or it's up your turn to go ahead and speak. You're up next. So it could be immediate or later. But the way your body kind of manages that, it's a very healthy response where it helps it stay alert, focused, as well as even perform better. Like when you're about to give a presentation, let's just say, or a kid runs to the streets, right? Your body kicks into gear. It's like, I'm going to do its job.
What is it, fight or flight mode?
Exactly. So your anxiety is doing its job.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, a lot of us can get tripped up when it's a, what's the difference between anxiety and what's the difference between stress? So when we talk about stress, stress is usually triggered by something external, like a deadline, a financial issue, or relationship conflict, right? Mm-hmm. It often goes away once the situation is resolved.
Mm-hmm.
Anxiety, on the other hand, can linger, and it may stick around even after that stressor is gone.
Okay. Or,
and it can also stick around even when there's no clear stressor. Like, you can't even put a finger on it. What's making you feel this anxious, or what's making you feel this restlessness inside, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it shows up when everything seems fine on the outside.
Okay.
So let's talk about some of the signs, because anxiety doesn't always show up as worrying. So it can be physical, it can be mental, or it's often both, to be honest. Now, when some people, they have anxiety, you can have physical symptoms. So some of these physical symptoms that they can have are your heart beating really fast. So rapid heartbeat, palpitations, like you're almost feeling like your heart is beating out of his chest,
mm-hmm.
feeling short of breath, or you can't get a breath in, feel like your muscles are tight or tense,
okay,
sweating, almost shaking or trembling, to even to the point of feel nauseous, like you want to just
throw
vomit
up.
Or, yeah, because you don't feel so good. It can also cause trouble sleeping, It's either falling asleep or staying asleep. And that knot in your stomach or the chest tightness that you feel, but you can't explain why you feel this way, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that's the physical symptoms. Now, mentally, what anxiety looks like is racing thoughts. So it's like you start with a thought like, okay, let's say I'm anxious about attending a party or what I'm going to wear or someone's going to be there. I'm going to get judged, whatever. I want to make a good impression, let's just say, right? So these thoughts, like you mentioned earlier, oh, is this outfit okay? Do I look okay in this outfit? Do I look not okay? Is this person going to like me? All these questions kind of are in our heads. Mm-hmm. But when it goes to one thought to the next thought to the next thought, and it's just these racing thoughts, that's what we call racing thoughts. When it jumps from thought to thought to thought to a point where now you worked yourself into a panic.
Okay.
So now you're thinking, okay, what if the color doesn't look nice on me? Then so-and-so is going to make a comment about my dress. And if she makes a comment about my dress, then other people are going to judge me based on that. And because other people are going to base me based on that, and now I'm not a good person or I'm not how I would like to be perceived. So therefore they won't like me. And because they won't like me, I won't have any friends. And because I won't have any friends, I'm going to be lonely. So I just
okay. So you just went from not liking the outfit or not knowing how people are going to perceive the outfit to now you're lonely, you have no friends, and it's a whole like almost a catastrophic situation
in your head. And that's okay. Also, what we call it is catastrophic thinking and how it escalated so fast.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what people with anxiety really struggle with, is that it's just an event, but now it feels like doomsday towards the end of my thought. So okay, the racing thoughts. I mean, also the constant worry that you can't get over it. You're overthinking. You're worried about the little things. You have a difficult time concentrating on something, or someone's talking to you might get irritable, or you feel like you're on edge. So when someone's saying, hey, can you just help me with this? You're like, I can't right now. I'm busy. But really, you're not. You're busy in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Or like someone is asking you, hey, do you think you could do this for me? But you can. But mentally, you're not going to be all there to do it. So you just want to avoid that because you want to spend time overthinking.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the irritability is a big sign of anxiety as well. Think about it. If you're worried about, you know, making a good impression and people not liking you, could say your mom's telling you, hey, it's time to eat. Because you're so worked up in your mind and you made a whole escalated situation in your mind, when your mom is telling you, hey, it's time to eat, you're like, what? I'm not hungry. Stop. So you're just snapping back because the internal irritability that you have and the thoughts you're having are coming out outwardly of those feelings, which necessarily has nothing to do with your mom just asking you, hey, let's go eat.
But you're dealing with all these racing thoughts in your mind. So in your mind, you're busy. You've got all this going on. And all your mom is saying is, come eat.
That's She's another not real. Thing.
Yeah, that's adding to everything else that's going on.
So now I feel easily overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And now I'm getting upset. Like, come on, I'm going through a lot. Stop. Like, so you're getting upset with her. And she's like, I just asked you to eat. And then you can catch yourself like, wow, that kind of outburst of emotion was not necessary for that kind of comment, you know, when she's asking you to come and eat.
So Sharuma, you described anxiety very well, physically and mentally. How would you say it plays in the South Asian community?
That's a great question. First, I want to thank you guys so much for actually bringing this topic, because it is a silent struggle. So I like to call anxiety as a silent struggle, especially in the South Asian culture. So in terms of anxiety, whether you're from India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, or even from Nepal, you come from a very close-knit community. So these kind of cultures are family-oriented. They value family, communities, honor. Family honor is a big thing in these Asian cultures. So these values of family honor and the sense of community is so deeply woven into the tapestry of being South Asian.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like you cannot take it away from you when you're outside, because people say, oh, if they know of you or you're from the same culture, you're so-and-so's daughter or you're from so-and-so place. Even though we are both South Asian, we can tell where each other person is from. But we all have a commonality, which is that value for family, honoring the family and the sense of community, which is really great and beautiful. And it really helps for grounding ourselves and really helping us to have a sense of belonging, right? But it can also come as a double-edged sword because mental health in that kind of setting is not spoken about. Often it's dismissed. It's very prevalent in our community. However, it's not spoken about. For starters, it's because we have this deeply ingrained idea of lo kya kahenge.
Yes.
What will people say? Mm-hmm. That phrase alone has silenced generations.
Yeah.
It teaches to keep our struggles to ourselves, to be strong, and to avoid anything that might bring shame to the family or something that's, you didn't see it, you didn't hear it, you don't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you did see it, you act like you didn't see it.
Yeah. I feel like it's a recurring theme in our culture. What will people say? And that's something that we have to break this cycle. You know, it's first and foremost, it's your mental health. You have to be healthy and you have to make sure your children are happy and healthy before you even think about what people will say. I think the other, and I was going to ask you about this, from what I see and have experienced a little bit of, is that in our culture, I feel we have a very difficult time setting boundaries. Does that play a part into anxiety?
Of course. It goes back to the dynamic of living in a very community society. Like if you're from those places, you're in a society where it's a community. So again, back to what people will say, I wonder if there's even a Hindi or Urdu word for anxiety. Do you know?
No.
Not even a Punjabi word. And the reason is because we can't even identify anxiety because it's dismissed. Mm-hmm. It's not talked about. And even worse, it's hidden. So for us to admit that, hey, I'm anxious, I don't even know what this feeling is to even explain to you, to even put a name to it, to even feel that. So most people, they say, oh, halchal, inside is like, I'm feeling a lot of restlessness inside. Or they have better English words to describe it than they do their own language.
Mm-hmm.
Or the constant feeling of like, you got to do something or you got to always be moving around, but unable to sit still and feeling that restlessness inside.
Mm-hmm.
But there is really no word that I know of anxiety in Bengali, that I know of in Hindi, even in Punjabi, that I am aware of, to be honest, that we can say is the equivalent to saying I'm anxious.
Yeah, no, you're right. I don't think that I'm aware of one either. Maybe ghabrahat, which is again, same thing, that halchal.
But that's more of
again,
worry.
That doesn't encompass, that could be anything. It's not specifically anxiety.
Correct. I just want to go back to in our South Asian community, having this feeling of what will people say and this intergenerational pressure, especially when you're part of that diaspora. Many of us raised by parents or grandparents who lived through war, poverty, migration to the US, and have lived through intense survival mode. Think about it, right?
Yeah.
They themselves are anxious. So when they've been through that, they have to remind themselves that because they're worried in the inside, they have to ground themselves into reminding themselves of the basic needs. So they will tell themselves oftentimes, you have food, you have shelter, you have an education or you have a family. So what are you stressed about? So minimizing it and dismissing it is a way of managing it for the Southeast Asian culture.
Yeah, you're right.
And it's not always coming from a place of judgment, but it's often coming from a place of misunderstanding. It's not someone's like, oh, you have anxiety? What is that? I'm too busy to have anxiety. I'm too busy to have depression, even in mental health. And it's not that they haven't felt it. It's the shame of admitting it, for one. Second, it's also the misunderstanding of it that they themselves cannot even relate, that I can be just anxious as the next person. Right?
Yeah.
And also from unhealed trauma, as when they may have been very anxious and not done something when they should have done it or made a mistake. Now they feel like they're walking on eggshells. So that makes them very anxious all the time. It's this unhealed trauma because I don't want to feel that way. I want to avoid all situations that can make me feel this way. So I keep myself from certain situations that can cause that.
Yeah.
And so you're beating around the bush, but not really addressing the issue.
Yeah. So when do you start to like spot the signs and like what do you look for beyond just like that feeling of nervousness or, you know, from what I had gathered from what you had said earlier about anxiety is that a certain amount of anxiety is actually good in the sense that it gets you up in the morning, gets you going, motivates you to a certain extent. But when do we know that this is beyond just a common stress, or it's getting to that point where now this is affecting your daily life? What are the signs to look for?
Okay, so that's a really good question you asked. And I want to explain to everyone that no one is immune to anxiety. I want to also explain that when it comes to anxiety, it's no matter how strong your background is, how strong you are, you're not going to be spared from anxiety. Mm-hmm. And it's a natural, like I said, a natural emotion that you experience. And it comes from an evolutionary response. And the evolutionary response is, for example, if we were in the caveman times, let's just say, right? And you're mm-hmm. sitting down and you're hunting or you're walking through the plains and you see a tiger. As soon as you see the tiger, are you going to be like, oh, hi, kitty, hi? No.
No.
What are you going to do? Your body's going to sense this is danger. Yeah. Run. So when you are experiencing anxiety, imagine that your body's going through the same evolutionary response as seeing a tiger wanting to eat you and attack you. So you're running for your life. Whether it's that drastic or not, your body perceives it as that threat and as that danger that it makes you make decisions, impulsive decisions sometimes, or even careless mistakes. And you're only one track mind in the sense of how am I going to survive this? So you just are going to be focused on that. You're worried about your life being chased by the tiger. So it's very important to be able to be aware of yourself. And the way to really be aware of yourself is be attuned with yourself. And that is really being honest with yourself, really reflecting on how you handle certain situations. So you have to understand, like I said, no one is immune to anxiety. There are biological factors, and yes, it can be hereditary. So you have to accept that no matter what you do, you're already maybe already predispositioned to that.
Okay.
There is strong evidence that it is genetic.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that if your mom has anxiety, that you definitely have anxiety, but it does mean that you might have a higher sensitivity of being stressed and reactive to stress than managing it fairly well. Okay. So there is a hereditary component to that. And when it comes to the brain too, there's brain chemistry that being affected. So people with anxiety have imbalances in neurotransmitters like serotonin, dopamine, and norepinephrine. So these chemicals that are in your prefrontal cortex, they regulate your mood and your response to stress. So if you don't make enough of these chemicals, this can worsen the anxiety. And you have to understand how much you make of this chemical and how less you make of this chemical is dictated by gene expression as well. So if your mom or your dad has anxiety, you have a higher sensitivity for that because you carry that gene and that gene may be expressed, which makes you not make enough, let's say, dopamine or a serotonin or even the norepinephrine, which worsens the anxiety. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, it makes perfect sense.
As much as it can be hereditary, it's also through lived trauma and experiences, how you perceive things, and which can affect how bad your anxiety is. Now, when it becomes a problem is when it's chronic, meaning it lasts for weeks, months, to even years. And it interferes with your daily life. Like it's making it hard to get up in the morning, to go to work, to even brush your teeth, to go to sleep, and lacking enjoyment in things. You don't find joy in things like you used to. You're always overthinking the situation rather than just diving into it like you did before. It can also cause physical symptoms like I explained earlier, and also cause fatigue, mental and both physical fatigue, as well as you keep your head always in this thought loop. I call it a rabbit hole where the overanalyzing, the worrying, and the doubting yourself is constant. And last but not least, it really can be a problem when you start to avoid things just because they make you feel anxious. So like social events, such as not driving, leaving the house, flying, or even checking your email. If you're anxious about seeing too many emails, it could be anything. As much as for us to say, that's silly, you have to understand that person that's going through that perceives that as a threat and really makes their anxiety even worse. So when it affects their daily functioning, this is a problem and this is the time that they need to seek help.
Okay. That makes it a little bit more clear because when it gets to that point where it's interfering with your day-to-day activities, it's no longer just a worry. It's no longer just a little bit of stress. It's actually debilitating at that point.
Yes.
Okay. So once you get to this point and you know that now something needs to be done about this, what is the first step that a person would take?
To realize that it is affecting your daily life, you have to actually see the quality of life you're living. Do you enjoy the quality of life you're living right now? So if you do, then it's something that's manageable for you. But if you're noticing that your friends are doing things and you're not able to do those things, or you're feeling like constantly like you're missing out, but you just can't do the things that you used to because of the fear of not being able to do it because of your anxiety, the ways to manage it could be either medication management. And you have to understand, I want to say this, is that anxiety is treatable. It is something that can be manageable. So you can do therapy as well as medication management for that as well. So when it comes to therapy, really going to a therapist, which you can do cognitive behavioral therapy. And in cognitive behavioral therapy, what they do is they really identify the anxious thoughts that you're fueling your worry. So whatever you're thinking about, I don't know what I'm worried about. I feel like the tornado is going to come hit my house. But you live in New York. We don't have tornadoes in New York. But I think it's going to come. So we have to first assess if it's something logic or illogical.
Yeah.
Right? Then, or if it's, oh, I'm just so worried something bad's going to happen to my mom because, you know, she was sick. So we have to kind of see, is it rational or irrational? And obviously with the irrational thoughts, we have to do a lot more work into placing the facts, naming them, and then eventually reframing your thinking. But in general, identifying the anxious thoughts that fuel your worry is very important. Then challenging and reframe your thinking is very important as well. You need to make sure that those thoughts are realistic and practical. So such as, like I said, remember the tornado hitting my house?
Yeah, that's not practical.
And that's not realistic.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to see where you live, right?
Yeah.
Now, if it was in Florida and worry about flooding, yes.
Yeah.
That's realistic. That's understandable. So we have to find, assess that and reframe our thinking into making logical sense. Now, having worry about your mom who may have been sick and then thinking, okay, it's logical to think about my mom who's been sick, that, you know, she's going to pass away or health is going to get worse. That makes sense. So your thinking in terms of that anxiety is valid and understandable. Then you have to learn coping mechanisms and strategies to calm your body and your mind. So we in psychiatry, we call it name it to tame it. And what we do is we actually ask yourself, what's making me so anxious? Really dig deep inside yourself and deep in those cobwebs in your mind and inside your heart and ask yourself, what's making me anxious? And being able to identify what's causing you to feel this anxious. And when you identify it, follow that thought through. So it's a fear of my mom being sick and she's not going to be, let's say she's going to get sick again. I'm worried about her sick again. But what is the actual outcome that I'm really afraid of? Losing my mom. Right? So following it through to the end of it and coming to terms with it and accepting it helps you manage that a lot better. So when I'm anxious about my mom being sick, let's just say, and I'm scared she's going to get sick again. And if she does get sick again, she might not survive. She may pass away. And if she does pass away, then she didn't get to see me get married. She didn't get to see me have kids. And my mom is a big part of my life. So I want her in my life. So because all these thoughts are so nervous, I don't even think about the next thought because the fear of losing my mom is so heavy and overwhelming. We have to logically go through them and say, okay, my mom is doing well. So let's focus on how she's doing well and at that moment and focus on the good part.
Yeah.
When it comes to the negative parts of your thoughts where it's telling you, oh, she's going to get sick or she's going to get sick to a point where she may pass away, you have to pick up the pieces there and learn coping mechanisms. When, if this, God forbid, thing does happen, how will I deal with it? And the first thing you're going to be like, oh my God, I'm going to be a hot mess. And that's okay. But the more you constantly tell yourself and the more you are trying to deal with coping with her loss, maybe eventual loss, you can tell yourself it's not a very frightening idea anymore. Right?
Yeah.
So you get used to the, in the beginning, it's very hard to like, oh my God, I can't even imagine. And now little by little, you're starting to even talk about it to the point where you're comfortable about it now that you can pick up the pieces that now you want to make the best of your time with your mom here and the now.
Yeah. Yeah. So it could lead to like positive steps in your life, basically.
Correct. But in the moment when you are struggling with these, let's say, panic attacks or increased anxious moments, learning coping strategies is very important. And that's the deep breathing, mm-hmm. reframing your thinking into positive, stating yourself with the facts again.
Yeah.
My mom is healthy. She's doing well. I will cross that bridge when I get there. Mm-hmm. Right? There's a saying, they say, worrying about tomorrow is not going to change the outcome of tomorrow, right?
Yeah, exactly. But it can affect your today.
Correct. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really well said.
So I'm going back to, let's say I'm a teenager or I'm in my early 20s. I'm dealing with all these thoughts, all this anxiety, and it's getting to that point where it is starting to affect me. I can identify it. How do I bring it up to my parents? And what I want is the perspective of, one, how this person would present it to the parents. And then I want to go a little bit into, as a mom, how you should handle the situation.
So when it comes to talking about anxiety, obviously because it's not spoken about in your everyday conversations, it's hidden, right? Most
yes,
of the time.
Yeah.
And it's not even acknowledged. If anything, it's dismissed in South Asian cultures. You have to have that conversation where you may pick up something that may look like anxiety that you do, that you have noticed maybe one of your siblings do or someone in the family done. So whether it's always worrying about getting somewhere on time or being somewhere 15 minutes earlier than you have to be there, if you notice that in one of your siblings or your parents, you can bring it up as, isn't it strange how we have to be there 15 minutes before than we have to be? I wonder why we have that. Like, you know why you may have that, but you want to bring that topic in a very informal way to them. So they might be like, yeah, I noticed that. You're right. So making them aware of some of the symptoms of anxiety that they
exhibit.
Exactly. Or they themselves are not even attuned to themselves. Like, mom, you ever wonder, you're perfectly fine, but when we have to get somewhere, you start screaming and yelling and we have to rush into the car.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and your mom's gonna be very happy about that when you tell her that, obviously. But obviously, finding the right time is very important, but also telling
find
them
a commonality.
That, yes, that
and,
you can.
And start with the commonality and then kind of maybe get into it. And but then as a parent, so Monica is the one who initially brought it up, and then I've employed her strategy, which is talking to your children, letting them know that they're going to be going through different phases in life and they're going to have some big feelings that they may not know how to express or how to talk about them or have fear of judgment. You know, they may think my parents aren't going to love me less, or they're going to think that I'm a bad kid if I tell them what I've done or what I'm, what is going on in my mind or whatnot. And I think what Monica had said was that, you know, she's told her kids that we can always have a time where it's like you come and you share whatever is in your mind and there is no judgment. And at that point, there's no repercussion. So if you come to me and you tell me, you know, I have something that I want to share with you and it's confidential, it's just between you and I, you know, she's made herself available, right, Monica?
Yeah. And, you know, I don't only remind that to them when there is something I can sense. It's just something that I throw in throughout the week or whenever I remember, you know, wherever I can tie it into, just to let them know that there's a comfortable space here at home. It's a safe space. And, you know, I feel like as parents, sometimes kids pick up on our anxiety. And, you know, because we're always rushing them and doing things and saying things like that. And I'd have to step back and let them know, like, you know, you may get worried at times for whatever may be happening, but just know that you can stop me and be like, mom, I need you right now, or dad. And it's a safe space and you can come and tell us whatever it is with no judgment.
Yeah. So I thought that was beautiful. When she told me this, I incorporated it immediately in my life with my kids. And we came up with a little name for it. So I tell my kids it's a H2H time, which is heart to heart. And I kind of set a guideline. I told them, whenever you are dealing with some feelings that you don't know how to make sense of, or something's happened at school and you're stressed about it, or you've done something that you think I may get upset about, all you have to do is just say, mama, it's H2H time. And I said, at that point, I will put everything away. We will sit down. We will have a discussion. You will tell me everything that's on your mind and without any fear of judgment. And I think so far, honestly, it's been working out really well because I have had my older one come to me and tell me sometimes it's really silly stuff. And sometimes it is something that he's genuinely concerned about or I guess distressed about. And then we just have a discussion and I just tell him, don't worry, I'm here for you. You can always share and it's our time. So I think employing something like that as a parent to me seems like would be a good strategy. As a nurse practitioner dealing with this, what are your thoughts?
I think that's wonderful. It's actually one of the things I would advise as well is creating an emotional safety net at home. Mm-hmm. So you're creating that emotional safety at home where, like you guys mentioned, there's no judgment, there's no consequences. You're allowed to feel the way you feel. And that's very empowering to them. And also avoiding, as we adults, we kind of take on that generational trauma from our parents, especially coming from Southeast Asian cultures, where we are used to hearing, oh, stop worrying. We don't have the luxury to overthink. Or don't talk like that. People think there's something wrong with you. Or it's stress. Stop overthinking it. So minimizing how anxiety is viewed. And when we address them, if they're anxious, also does not help. That's how not to address it, right? So mental health is real. Kids feel anxiety, teens feel it, adults feel it. And ignoring it doesn't make it go away. If anything, it teaches our children to suffer in silence, right?
Yeah.
So creating that open, healthy space at home where they can feel emotional safety to share this feeling with you, it's a very important thing to have. And it's very rare, especially in Southeast Asian cultures, homes to have that. But also using simple language. Instead of saying, do you feel anxious in your body? Do you feel, you can ask, do you ever feel nervous in your body? Like your heart or your stomach hurts or you didn't and you don't know why. So helping them identify some of those symptoms of anxiety, that opens them to say, yeah, actually, I felt like that last time when we were going to so-and-so's house and I didn't really want to go. And to normalize that feeling, saying it's understandable to feel this way. Instead of saying, oh, you're just worrying for nothing.
Yeah,
how our parents would have said to us, right?
Yeah. So basically, let your kids feel the way they want to feel.
Yes.
And let them express it and validate their feelings.
Yes. Another way of helping your child is also letting them know that you're not perfect, that you're also human, and that you may be struggling just like them. So sharing your emotions with them lets them know that, oh, there's nothing wrong with me. My mom struggles with it too. It's like, I'm okay the way I am. And so in many Southeast Asian cultures, kids grow up never hearing their parents talk of their own struggles. Like they're in terms, they only use it as a fuel. Like, oh, you wouldn't know what it's like to come to America with $5 in your pocket. Like that's what we hear it as, right? As like more of like a threat to us to get it together, right?
Yeah.
But we never hear their struggle in the sense that, hey, that I may have gone through this too and it's okay. It's normalizing it. So having conversations like when I was your age, I didn't know what anxiety was, but I used to feel worried all the time and thought that something was wrong with me. So you're not alone. It's okay to feel this way. So just owning their feelings makes them feel empowered that there's nothing wrong with them, that they're normal. It's a healthy, normal feeling to feel. And they're not alone, that you're with them as well.
Yeah. So from what I'm gathering from you is you have a child who is exhibiting signs of anxiety. The first step you do is you maybe start talking about your own struggles, your own anxiety. You sort of introduce that topic so that the kids know this is something that's normal. You allow yourself to be vulnerable in front of your kids so that they know that they can also reciprocate and do that. Then you create this space for them to be able to listen to what's going on and validate their feelings, I would say would be the second step. And then once you get to that point where it is now affecting their daily life, it is debilitating, then not be afraid to reach out, get a therapist or get a professional. That's something that in South Asian cultures, we don't normalize. And honestly, I've always felt this. Everybody can use a therapist.
I totally agree. I just wanted to add to what you were saying about validating how they feel is that when they share those feelings with you, I'd really like parents to really acknowledge that child and say, I'm really happy, proud of you for sharing that. Or I know that sounds tough, but we'll get through this together. So they know that they're not alone, that they have someone with them through this struggle. So mm-hmm. letting them know that, hey, buddy, it's okay. I'm here with you. We're going to do this together. Lets them know that first, it's okay to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Second, someone else feels like this.
Yeah.
So I'm not the only one. So I'm not a weirdo.
You're on the same team.
Yes, I'm not a weirdo. And the person that I love and trust the most may be struggling with it too. So they can help me because they themselves have been through it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So again, when it comes to seeking help, Southeast Asian cultures, because like I said, we're so community ingrained and mm-hmm. family honor ingrained that we don't look for individualistic parts of our self-care. So therefore, mental health is considered an individualistic kind of thing.
Yeah.
So mental health, like, oh, what's wrong with them? There's nothing wrong with them. Why are you want to take them to the doctor for? You know, so talking about it more, making more people aware about it and to normalize it is really going to open that doorway for people to really seek help and to get over their misconceptions and really normalizing mental health. So going to seek help is very important, and they can seek help, whether it's therapy, whether it's medication management, but it's very important that they do the work. Just by telling someone your struggles helps alleviate it from your heart.
Yeah, exactly. It takes courage. So like you said, validating the person and telling them how courageous they are for even just talking about it, that's the first step. And I love what you said about mental health being individualistic. I would say that your overall health is actually very bio-individual. Not just your mental health, but your physical health. Some foods that one person eats could be medicine for that person, but it could be poison for the other person.
Correct.
So it's just, you know, for everything that we do. So I think a lot of times we are so quick to say, well, I'm surprised that this little comment had that effect on you, because I wouldn't even care if somebody said that to me. You know, even just mm-hmm. that statement is invalidating that person's feelings.
Correct.
And it's making the situation worse, not better. So as parents, being mindful that what seems like not a big deal to you may be the biggest worry that your child has. And it may be, like you said, your body is perceiving it as a threat from a tiger. That's very real,
mm-hmm.
right? We really appreciate you, Shahruma, coming on and talking about this. I think we've just scratched the surface of, you know, what anxiety is and how to deal with it. But I think we've scratched it enough that it should make a difference to parents, to children who are dealing with anxiety. This has been a very, very valuable conversation. Do you have any other thoughts that you would like to add to this discussion?
Yes, I'd like to mention that when it comes to parents talking about mental health to their children, or a child talking to their parents about mental health, is that they should feel, like you guys mentioned, a place of support. They should feel that safety, emotional support at home. And if they don't, and they're asking for that, it may come across as, I'm feeling this way. I'm not asking you to fix it for me. I just need you to be there and listen to me, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you have to understand, when it comes to generational silence, and your parents may look puzzled and be confused if they react, what are you talking about? I am there for you. I take you to school. I'm doing everything. I'm putting roof over your head, doing all these things. So many South Asian parents have never been taught this language.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't know how to take it.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that they don't love them,
mm-hmm.
love their child. It might take time to learn that language. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And it takes courage to break this generational trauma of silence of mental health,
mm-hmm.
whether you're the parent or the child. But when one person opens that door, even just a little, it creates a space of healing. And that's how change begins, right?
Yeah.
And I want parents to understand that their child's anxiety is not a failure. It's a chance to really show them love in a new way.
Mm-hmm.
And to the kids, that your feelings are valid. Speaking up is one of the bravest things you can do.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking more about it, making awareness, is very important to the future of breaking this generational silence of mental health.
Very well said. So given our entire conversation, what would you say today's golden biscuit should be?
I don't know. Ask Monica. She's the one that watched it all. Monica, what do you think it should be?
You know, for me, what was an eye-opener was, so for me, if I've ever felt anxiety, I've always not brushed it off, but I've done a coping mechanism to not think of it. So if I feel like an anxious thought is coming on, like I'll start breathing or I'll, you know, calm my mind or just turn the thought off. And when you said to kind of actually play it through to whether this is practical or not, is something that I did not know of at all.
Yeah, that's actually a very good point.
Like if we're saying to let our children, to validate our children's feelings and our anxiety, I think just in general is to not ignore anxiety or not just brush it off as, oh, this is just another feeling that's happening. It'll go away on its own. You know, like actually experience it, live it through, and then let it pass. Maybe that's why sometimes we feel like it's reoccurring. Like sometimes it's certain thoughts for me, I know, that will bring on anxiety throughout the day or throughout the week or so. That was a really big thing I learned from this one.
Yeah, I know. I agree with you 100% because you think about what's the worst that can happen and then you come to terms with it.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't bother you anymore.
Yeah, I guess coming to terms with your feelings and accepting it and owning it.
Yeah.
Kind of to add to what Monica was saying, that really thinking the thought through, we call it name it to tame it, where we have to be able to name it, then we have to follow it through, and reframing our thinking as we're following it through. Actually, research shows that if you do that, you have less incidence of panic attacks and that anxiety reoccurring again. Because when that thought comes again, you have already worked yourself through the rationale and worked yourself to that thought to the end, that now even something can trigger that, whether it's a picture, a phrase, or anything that can trigger that anxious thought in you, you're not going to be having a full panic attack because you've come to terms with your feelings towards that anxious thought.
Yeah, exactly. That makes perfect sense. So Monica and I would like to thank you, Shahruma, for coming on and sharing your valuable insights and your expertise. And we'll be back again next week.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to Rue. We appreciate you joining us as we cultivate a community of strong, empowered women, one story at a time. If you or someone you know has a story you'd like to share, please contact us at ruedaraz@gmail.com. That's ruedaraz@gmail.com. Also, do us a favor and please share this podcast with your sisters, your mom, your friends, aunties, your eyebrow lady, like any lady you know. You know, you get the idea. Till next time, kush raho, be well.